Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, yes, it is 5:30 in the morning, and I don't know why I've chosen to record this now, but welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life, double podcast release day, Jesus, and the other one was Merz. This one is a very special guest, XP from Flame Griller, the West Yorkshire rap crew, who, if you don't know about, you need to know. He was in town, came along for the podcast. It's difficult because I ask to do a little intro for these now, and then when it comes to doing the intro, I've got very little to say. So arguably, this is pointless. But the long and the short of it is he's a top bloke. By everything he does, by everything Flame Griller does, by everything that XP does, because they're brilliant, and I just think we should be supporting people that are doing great stuff like this. But that will all come across on the podcast. So sorry about this intro. It's probably going to be the last one I ever do, so enjoy it for that, at least. Okay, enjoy, bye.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. There's no rematch today. Because I don't think I told him about it. Anyway, so I am joined by Ben, or XP, from Flame Griller. How are you doing, bro?
Very well, man. How are you doing? All right.
Good, thank you. We're sort of in a bit of a weird setup here because we're in my agent's office, and it's like a bit...
It's very grand.
It is very grand, yeah.
A lot of DVDs.
Yes, yeah. If you're a Lee Evans or Michael McIntyre fan, it's like paradise.
When was the last show you did of this? Are you managing to keep them regular or...?
No is the answer. We're trying, but I don't know. We're just very poorly organised, I guess. We sort of stack up a few and then...
Do you rely on rappers to get in touch and badger the hell out of you like I did? Or...
Well, we've been trying to get you on for a while, but the problem is it's geography, isn't it?
Well, Leeds is a nightmare, and you're not... I haven't seen your any tour slots of you coming up north for a bit.
Well, no, because I'm going to go on tour soon.
Oh, right.
Not soon. It's not soon. I'm still writing the fucking show, so I don't know why I said
that.
But I'm going to go on tour.
Right.
But where have I done in Leeds? So I've done... Is it the... Oh, God, what's that? Really nice...
City Varieties.
City Varieties, yeah.
A lot of people pass.
Have you performed at a City Varieties?
No. I've been to see comedians, though. I've seen, you know, Tim Vine, James A. Caster, people like that,
right,
just
right,
for
right.
going along.
So City Varieties is got one of the slopiest stages, I would say, of any venue. So like the whole time, every time I've done City Varieties, which is only a few times, I felt like I'm going to like tip forward into the audience, basically.
Nice.
So there's whenever you see a comedian performing at City Varieties, that is what's also going through their mind. So you've got to be aware of the fact that, you know, they're not just talking shit, they're also trying to stay on the stage, you know what I mean? It's a nice venue, though. It's sick, isn't it?
Nice, yeah. It's old school. It's been there for, like, 100-odd years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other one I did when I was doing, like, weekend gigs was the Hi-Fi.
Fuck. What a weird place to do it. That must have been early on in the career. That's quite a small, diddly little venue.
I think they still do gigs there, but, like... It was when I used to do Jonglers and Highlights, my friend. So, like, you go and do... But that... I mean, it was fun, but the people were... I mean, they're properly fucking hammered and, like...
Oh, was it a late night, Friday
sort of
thing?
Like, weekend... I did Friday and Saturday there, like, doing weekend gigs there, and it was like...
We just heckled to pieces. Or
basically, like, yeah.
I've played Hi-Fi before, because it's a music venue as much as anything. It's a nice venue for that.
I can imagine it being a better music venue than a comedy
venue. Yeah. They used to have an amazing sound guy in there, actually. He was, like, the local sound guy for all the Leeds, and he did all the cool gigs, like at Brudenell Social Club, which has got a really good reputation. He used to do all the sound up there. But he passed away in the last couple of years. years, and like, it's never really been the same since, music wise, because he really cared about the sound that came out.
Yeah.
And he was a good guy. So yeah, but hi-fi always ends up, you're drawing in acts like Ugly Duckling and stuff like that. So it's like touring acts that need to fill out a room of about 400. Like, you do okay out of it. Like, it's always a good deal there.
So you're from Leeds, are you?
Bradford, really.
Right, okay.
Like, I was born in Kent. For my sins.
Are you serious?
I was born in Bromley, man. I don't often tell people this, but yeah.
Fuck,
so
man.
My parents, yeah, had me in Bromley, but by three they moved up to Bradford.
Right.
So by the time I was able to talk, like, it was okay.
Do you have any recollections of what it was like when you did the move? Because I imagine if you're rocking a Kent accent, like in Bradford,
a little cute toddler Kent accent, so it was all right.
Okay.
But yeah, no, first school did shape my, because my parents are relatively well to do in terms of their accent and stuff. They didn't have a really strong anything, even though my dad was Derbyshire and stuff. But yeah, once I got to first school, there were a lot more. Yeah, I think it developed my accent a lot better. But I get spotted as a northerner down here. But if I'm up north, there's plenty of people more Yorkshire than I am.
Right.
I sort of hide behind the fact, you know, if it comes out too much that I'm from Bromley,
Well, we can take this out if you want.
Yeah, thanks, man.
But listen, Flame Griller, amazing, man. I've been listening a lot to your... When did your solo... Remarkable Unremarkable, when did that come out?
Good memory. Yeah, about this time last year. It was about a sort of July, August drop.
Yeah.
And it was kind of my first solo effort. Like, I started doing solo stuff. 2006, put my first ever album out.
Yeah.
And it was like all the mistakes you can possibly make as a musician. I made them. Like, I even ran 1,000 copies of the CD off and sold about 100 of them. Do you know what I mean? Just because I was like, well, it's 50p a CD. It's going to be worth it in the long run, but it really won. So I made all my stupid mistakes then, but then I kind of considered that album that I put out last year. It was like my main first album. The rest of that up to that.
Oh, I'ma give it to you. Here's some trivia. Sucre is the capital of Bolivia. Google was originally named Backrub. Benjamin Franklin imported America's first bathtubs. Captive, allergic to humans. The measure of quantity, your visual light is a lumen. I'm assuming you know it all, mate. But bubble wrap was originally intended as wallpaper. Remember when you watched the DVD, the anti-pirate thing you couldn't see? Skip easily, saying you wouldn't steal a car off a TV screen. The backing music was used illegally. Glitter can be
it's
used
so good, man.
Big up.
Thank you so much. Like, I mean, it's obviously the thing that I get across from listening to you guys as Flame Griller and your solo stuff is that it's not easy to keep putting out stuff. You know, like, there are financial, because it costs you money, obviously, like you just alluded to put the stuff out. Do you have like a target of what you consider to be a success for that album, or do you just think, because you talk a lot on the album about how it's about the art and stuff like that,
just to be really pretentious,
but
it's true. There is a point where I think as long as we're happy with the content, we will kill babies. We'll do like 25 tracks and go, these are crap.
Right.
That said, I don't know whether you've heard The Negativity by Flame Griller. That's like, that's the one on Spotify. It's like 500,000 plays, and the next track is like 30,000 plays. It's like people just go fucking mental for this track.
I was born a fortunate guy with a portion of pie, not silver spoon fed, just a shiny fork and a knife. I've been awkward and shy nearly all of my life, but something about rap gave me all of my pride. Started performing at nights. I was awful on mics, but you gotta start somewhere. I was in awe of the guys who could tear it up with the freestyle and talk to the mind. Till one day the sickest one of them pulled me aside, took my number, said we should hook up. Mech beats, experimentality was too long, so we named me XP, and that stuck. He taught me how to rap good, then we'd head out of Bradford and get mashed up. Years
we weren't going to put that out because we found it really cornball and cheesy and a bit like, this isn't going to go well at all, like, let's not put this out because it just doesn't fit with this kind of jazzy ethos just for the art, man, kind of bollocks. And that became our biggest success, as it was. And like, in lots of ways, we're really proud that it's got to that point, and we get people all the time going, you know, it's all about the negativity for me, and I play that when I'm in a bad place and stuff, and it's lovely. But at the same time, like, if it wasn't for like our girlfriends at the time going, you should put that on, we'd have left it off. So you make,
really?
I think you make bad decisions as a result of trying to be a bit, not pretentious, but trying to be a bit like, no, it's not good enough, the art's not good enough, we've got to, you know, suffer for it. But we're happy with the rest of it, and I think we've got to the point with that track where we like it, and we'll play it as like our encore track at a gig, and we'll just deal with the fact that that's the one people want to hear. But
have you ever not wanted to play it? Because like, I saw this article about some bands or whatever that like, they refuse to play their biggest tunes. Like, I think Radiohead refused to play Creep for like years.
I believe that. Yeah.
No, because when it's live, you go with whatever you can, I think. And the majority, I mean, we're such a no. I shouldn't be sitting here now, man. Like, we're such nobodies that like, anything we get, we're very grateful for. Like, and we don't just gig for this. There was a time where we would try and gig as much as we could if people wanted it, but we wouldn't just do the old Black Swan on a Wednesday night
for a tenner
or whatever. We try and do hip hop based gigs, which are few and far between in Yorkshire anyway. But if someone, you know, gets in touch and wants Flame Grilla, that we kind of want to cater to them and their, you know, the fans and stuff like that. We go down really well in Northampton.
Really?
So we can't get a gig in Leeds for love or money, but Corby, specifically Corby, which is next to Kettering, if you've ever been before.
Yeah.
They're great guys down there, and they love us. And with all our best gigs, our top three gigs, we just did one last weekend. It was a festival that these lads put on themselves. They just put there's a speed course down there, puts a massive festival on, and like people front to the back of tent going mental. We can't get like an eighth of that crowd in our back door. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's mental where it's caught on.
Well, there's been an explosion of UK hip hop. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Right?
But that has been arguably very London-centric, hasn't it?
Yeah, London and Brighton and stuff like that down this way.
Yeah, of course, because you've got high focus. Have you experienced an explosion as well, or do you feel like outsiders to that, or like what's kind of your take on it?
Yeah, a little bit. It was... Yeah, you do feel a little bit, but then it's your own problem. If I wanted to go and rub shoulders with these people, I should be down there rubbing shoulders with them. It's not their fault that they've all managed to create a community. Because good hip-hop scenes come out of having a community not far apart that are always hooking up, getting stoned with each other, making a beat, making a tune, and loads of stuff happens that way. And we had a bit of an explosion back in 2011, sort of 12, up in West Yorkshire with our own Dub Y scene, it was called, for the West Yorkshire. And we had this logo that was like New York with a W and a Y.
Right.
Didn't really see much of it. Lunacy came out of that, who I know you've heard of, and other people like that who've been in Don't Flop. There's a guy called Matt Herb. And that kind of blew up through us hooking up at my studio and freestyling. And there was something called the WY Cypher. Just going off on a side thing, did you ever hear about the guy in Coronation Street who lost his job because he was freestyling?
No.
Oh, right. Well,
I did. Yeah, sorry, what am I talking about? Yes, I did.
Guy called Chris, who was in Coronation Street. And for a weekend, he was just on the tabloids, rape rap.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
My studio, bro. That happened.
Congratulations,
in my... Thanks, man. I'm very proud of killing a guy's whole career. His whole nest egg ruined it. But I don't know how it happened. And like, basically, he was coming along to freestyle, and literally there was a rule where it's off the top only, no written stuff.
Right.
And you know how that can be just from improvising, I'm sure. It doesn't take long before some bullshit comes out of your mouth.
Yeah.
You'd regret, but it was being filmed, that it was for jokes, and often the stuff, that ridiculous stuff that comes out of your head was, and I mean the stuff he said was in the middle of talking about badgers with seven toes, do you know what I mean? It was like, and then he said like a rapes this, that and a third,
badger
or whatever.
Stuff sounds pretty full on as well.
Yeah, or mate, well it depends where you're at with badger culling. But he wore a mask so he couldn't be seen, and other
mate,
people.
Mate, I remember. This is fucking big, wasn't it?
A graffiti artist made the mask up for him so he could wear it while he was chilling with us. And sometimes he'd just chill or whatever. But someone obviously dobbed him in from the crew, which we still don't know. I mean, there was upwards of 30, 40 people who come round to my house, so they knew it was him and stuff. So we didn't have a clue. But one of the main pictures they use in the tabloids with the mask on was my mate wearing a mask one time, and they're just like, here he is, like in all his.
So it's like a fucking Doom lookalike situation.
Exactly, yeah. And it was an indefensible situation, because obviously I had the papers like contacting me going, oh, you know, what, you know, we want to hear your side of the story. And there's just no, with the Daily Mail or whatever, there's no side where you're going to go, well, you know, he was just saying some stuff. Oh, he was just saying some stuff, says local rapper. Like,
yeah.
It's never going to go down well. But my point is, like, that was like the highest point of like the West Yorkshire scene and stuff. There was a hip hop venue at that time in Leeds which had just never been heard of. Some guy bought a club, and it was only a little diddly thing, but we were getting like Pete Rock down, stuff like that. It was always local artists, and it was just like such a good vibe. But now it's kind of disintegrated again, and I think we do all look over our shoulders at kind of what's going on down south. You see High Focus, you see the kind of moves that like Ocean Wisdom's making when he's like got Method Man on his track and stuff
like that
and you're like
mad,
fuck man, like how are you gonna pull that off, like tricky man.
I think Method Man would like Yorkshire though, wouldn't he? I don't know how many times
I can't imagine. Well, he's definitely been a red man to play like Academy and stuff like that, but he'll just chill and leave.
It's interesting you talk about that that thing with the guy doing a freestyling, because when we're doing podcasts, for example, I have had in the past, and maybe like when I quit, I'll put out all of the cuts out of this podcast, but there have been times when you're just sitting around chatting and just comedians
talking shit.
Just talking shit.
Of course.
And I mean, I won't allude to, it sort of defeats the object of us cutting out in the first place if I then say what it is I said. But the thing is that you just don't know how people are going to latch onto shit, particularly for that guy. I mean, like that is,
that's two worlds colliding, because in the world of like just spitting freestyles, it's probably nothing, but you've already even registered, do you know what I mean? But the thing is that to somebody else, especially as the thing with rap lyrics is whenever they focus on, like, I remember when like Snoop first came out, and like
burning his CDs.
Do you remember they were just like in the papers, they would just take a lyric and put it in isolation. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, listen, let's be honest, Snoop's first album has got a few choice fucking pretty lyrics real, on it. Yeah. But that sort of just put in a thing, in an article, it looks so fucking bad.
It does. I remember, well, NWA was like the biggest shit stories in that kind of thing. And I remember, like, was it a policeman maybe reading out in court, like, the lyrics and, like, killing all police? It's sort of like, and it was, in isolation, it was like, yeah, that's, I can see why you feel that's quite brutal, but you can't shut it down.
And also, Frankie Ball's a big fan of yours, isn't he?
Yeah, very lucky.
Because he's the one that basically told me about you guys. Like, he's a massive fan.
I know, he's a G.
Because I know he supported you because you tried to, you kickstarted an album and got, like, hit the target, like,
that was
super early. Right?
Yeah, thanks to him and other people and format and stuff like that. It's just, yeah, mate, we were very lucky. And I hate to say that the way we came across Frankie Boyle was like one of those unsolicited just tweeting the guy, and it was one of the guys in Flame Grilla, and Frankie Boyle was doing that Hip Hop Wednesday thing he was doing,
and people, on Twitter,
people were like, shit, he likes hip hop. And he knows what he's talking about as well, which I think surprised everyone, because he doesn't appeal to be that guy until you see him on stage with Akala, and like, oh, okay, he's down with Akala, then fair enough. He for some reason he responded to this message, and like, and then since then we've just chatted, but it's very similar to my relationship with you, where it's like, don't softly don't message him too much, like, in case, like, right, block. And because, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's massive opportunities that, like, guys like you and Frankie and whoever can, like, listen to our stuff and tell a few of their thousands of followers about us, because it just, it saves a lot of fucking about, mate. Like, just, you know, paying for adverts to try and get people to listen to it or whatever. It's a difficult market out there. So, like, if you, you know, it's very useful when you guys latch onto it.
How did you find it? Well, one of the things I, because I shared your Work Is So Shit video, right?
Yeah.
I said that work is so shit. Get me out of this office. This place is so full of dicks. I don't know why I don't quit. I said that work is so shit.
So I jibbed it off, they laughed a bit. He's off to do his hippie hop. Flipping knobs, this is exactly what I mean. You've got some proper work done, I've got some proper dreams. Don't really want to scheme from behind a computer screen. Could be out there in the real world successfully being me. But money is the problem there with all of that. So if you're still stuck in there, learn alt and tap. Quick trick.
There's something about that tune that connects with people, because, like, so many people, loads of people are in a job that they hate,
enough,
right? And the video properly tunes into that.
Yeah.
And the tune is like, it's sort of inspirational, isn't it? Because you're sort of saying, if you're just plodding along, you need to get the fuck out or whatever.
Definitely.
And that really appeals to everyone. And I thought that video went big, because, like, people that I know that weren't hip hop fans, because people that I'm friends with on Facebook get fucking sick of me sharing hip hop videos and going, oh, this is great, or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
But that had a connection. Do you notice that there's certain subject matters that sort of connect more than others?
Starting to specialise in that myself. Like, it's kind of moaning like a grumpy old man is like my genre of music now. Because I'm 33 and I'm past that. I can't hang around smoking weed with the cool dudes and, like, spitting bars about shagging your mum or whatever. I can't have it. So I'm like, what things really get on my nerves? And, like, that song wrote itself. Usually songs that write themselves immediately are kind of the ones that, you know, are going to be decent, true, because it's just something that's like, it just pours out of you. Because I just had so much bitterness from it. I wasn't even in an office when I finished writing that. Like, I would long sacked it off. But I do find people latch onto those ones more, and they kind of grab onto them as a bit of a kind of, oh, that, you know, I've actually thought about sacking my job in now because of that. And that's it's always nice to have, like, an influence in people's actual lives.
And then they get in touch with me about a year later and they go, I'm fucking destitute
now. Got no job, wife's left me.
Thanks a lot.
I haven't had that yet, but we're just getting on to a year now, so it could yet happen.
Your solo album, you produced it all yourself.
I did.
And one of the things I think about that album is, obviously, it's so you. I mean, it's so unadulterated you. But it does, again, highlight to me the link between hip-hop and comedy, because you're funny on that album, right?
Well, that's going in the press kit.
But you are properly funny in that album. Like, are you writing those lyrics purely to please yourself? You're never thinking, this is what people might like or anything like that.
No. It's the ridiculousness. You know, stuff that you go, you know, things that you laugh about in your head, they're so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Then they're obviously funny, aren't they? So it's just something to talk about. One of your first ever podcasts with a mate of mine, Jester J.
Oh, right,
Of course, made that transfer from hip-hop. Well, he still does rap.
Yes.
But into stand up, and he's doing his thing. Like he was, I saw him at Edinburgh Fringe last year, and he's a great guy. But he was chatting to me about how similar like it seems stand up, and they're trying to hit a vibe with an audience and trying to, you know, hit a funny string.
The thing is like, particularly if you're into lyrics, like it's. The both things are about punchlines, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's
set up almost. Yeah,
exactly.
So which I don't do, but there's a lot of, you know, and some of the best simile rappers. I mean, we were talking about Luna before. Like, he's a genius for that kind of stuff where it's a such and such like bar, a simile that just no one's ever heard of, and it's genius. And those things are like funny in their own right. Like, I struggle to write anything along those lines. Like,
right.
Which, and I think there's kind of a true lyricism to that, because if you can make something funny out of nothing, because anyone can go, work shit, innit? But making something funny out of something that you'd never even thought of, like, I think that's the true lyricism. Like,
there was something that, oh god, what was it, you deliberately fucked up the rhyme and then corrected yourself.
Oh,
afterwards.
Lost or something. Loses.
And you
that's right, man. Yeah.
And that's comedy, man.
Did that work? So I was, when I did that, I was like, is this a bit cheesy? And I think I played it to one guy and he was like, he laughed, and I thought,
That's properly funny, man.
Fair dues.
I was going to ask you as well about, on that album, we talk a lot about misogyny in hip-hop.
Word.
On this podcast. In fact, whenever one of the things that we ask people is, what don't you like about hip-hop? And nine times out of ten, it's a misogyny, right?
Yeah.
And you got the track Sex Panther.
Yeah.
60% of the time.
Rappers talk about women every time, and we enjoy Biggie's a friend of mine, but never mind that. In the 90s, it was effective, and it's still awkward as hell listening to the sex skits. I mean, what possesses anyone to record, fake or not? A load of moaning and groaning in between your famous songs to prove what? You get ladies, or ladies get you? Does the idea that we think you've never done it vex you? Is this school again? Are we back in sick form, laughing at verse?
Is that something? Where do you stand on, detaching your beliefs from what you're listening to? Or, I mean, I guess from when you're making it, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah, but. I literally listen. I mean, my wife drove me here and I was listening to Biggie.
Right.
You know, I'm on Spotify and stuff coming out of his mouth is like, you know how it is with that. But I don't know. Yeah, I can detach from it. And I think it's an era thing. I think you could get away with it. I feel it, and it's rife now. There's plenty of it in the UK hip hop scene and beyond. Bloody hell, mumble rap's full of that kind of degrading of women. And it feels these days you're like, man, really, are we still kind of leaning on this? But I guess it's just that bravado that'll always be in hip hop of like, I get many ladies and much money kind of thing. It's the standard thing that everyone's going to say. If that's, you know, why do you think you're successful? Well, got ladies and money kind of. But personally, I hate it, but I could never do anything like that myself. Well, I've never been a massive player anyway, sort of thing, so I couldn't pretend. But I've got three nieces, a wife, you know what I mean, mother and sister, and it's like, I don't like the idea that they're listening to that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I wouldn't play Biggie like in front of the family. I wouldn't be like, should we listen to some Radio?
I know.
It's that kind of vibe.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because like, you sort of, the thing I find about tracks like that is like, because one of the things that my wife accused me, I don't know if your other half is into hip hop, but mine isn't massively. I think she likes the Roots and that's about it.
Sick.
And it's a good, But every now and again, we can't listen to it with the kids in the car, but when the kids aren't in the car, we'll like put something on. And then when they say something proper, fucking graphic and horrific, I feel embarrassed, man, because I just feel I'm a grown up that's telling you that I like this stuff.
Yeah,
and then
they're
coming out with this. At least you're just looking at me like, are you fucking serious, man? Like, is this what you're into?
It appeals to that generation, though, doesn't it? I grew up with Slim Shady LP. Like, that was bang on. And if you listen back to that, it's like, you know, some of it is amazing and really good lyricism, but it is all just the whinings of someone who's just been horrendous the whole time. But from a kid's perspective, it's what you want to hear. You want those boundaries broken, I think.
I know.
So I think kids latch onto it, and also we're in a market musically that's dominated by the under 18s. Like, I'm not gonna kill it with selling my stuff to over 30s, which is, you know, 25s and over moaning bastards who are married. It's kind of my market, which is a bit niche, but people who are throwing money at iTunes vouchers and all the rest of it are kind of in that age group where they do want to rebel and they do want to hear that kind of vibe. So I think it will continue forever, that misogyny. Like,
it's because the Eminem thing is like, it almost felt slightly different because he sort of, I wouldn't say it was tongue in cheek, because he says some stuff straight down the line.
Yeah.
But it's almost like he's like, I'm doing this to shock you.
Yes.
And that's almost sort of more acceptable than somebody saying something really fucking shocking. And you just think that's their view, that's their take on it.
That's what they believe. That's their everyday life. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
So What are you up to now? What's your sort of plans? What's the next step?
I'm blagging comedians for opportunities on Twitter, I guess. Mate, genuinely, that's about it. I'm writing a second album at the moment. I'm about 5 tracks into that. I'm pretty proud of that.
Oh, wicked.
There's like 3 tracks that I'm super, like, better than anything I've put out so far. And then the rest, I'm like, these aren't good enough at the moment. So I'm sort of hammering them at the moment. But that, and I'm kind of pushing my own stuff, but I'm not doing much with it. I'm not gigging all the time and I'm not trying to. I've got a very nice life in Leeds. We have a bungalow. I've got a studio there we built. I just get to chill, make music. Everything's good. I'm self-employed. So I'm not like hungry like 15 years ago or whatever when I was starting rapping or whatever. It was like, it's just got to happen. I've got to go there. I've got to do this. Whereas now I'm much more chilled out. But I think the hunger shows. And I think in today's climate of putting music out, if you're not putting a new mixtape out or whatever every 3 months, people do start snoring on you a little bit, sort of forgetting about you. So I'm faking it till I sort of don't really make it anyway. Like I'm not asked. I would hate to be in a situation like you are, where you can't walk down the street probably without getting asked by 1,000 people for a freaking selfie or whatever. Yeah. Like, that must do you nothing. And I'm glad, I don't think I'll ever get to that point, and I'm glad that I get to this stage. But I'd like to do it. I'd like to be bigger than Flame Griller. That's what's pissing me off right
really?
Now. Yeah. When the Spotify plays come in and it's like, well, Flame Griller doing well. I've got like 200 plays for the fucking month. You're like, this is my own. I'm, oh man, it's just a bit emasculating for your own. I want to get, so that's my main goal at the moment, get my shit to the point where people, you know, are talking about that as much as they might be talking about Flame Griller, which is still very low down in the priority of anyone's UK hip hop playlist kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. I'm winging it. And I'd rather give out records to people who might be in the know, or, you know, just to kind of spread the word a little bit and get a little bit of a following that way. Because I don't know what the fuck to do otherwise, because I'm never going to be a 2-album-a-year guy.
Yeah.
Barely 1 every 2 years sort of thing, if I'm lucky. And I do bits and pieces on the side, but I've got to be, I'm so anal about it. It's got to be right and it's got to sound right that I think people lose interest. So chuff knows, mate.
Have you had it become easier for you to get stuff on, like, because I know that they're more willing to play UK hip-hop on radio now, aren't they?
Marginally. Radio 2 are almost going the way of playing hip-hop during the day, aren't they? So Radio 6 are really good. Hard to get in there, though, man.
Really?
Like, it's about who you know, man. Like, mate, I can't even get played on local radio stations. Like,
seriously?
Mate, I mean, how do you do it? You tell me how I would go about getting on radio stations. Like, I'll send a demo to them, I can ring them, but they'll generally just, it's not really for our playlist or whatever. Man, I can't even get stocked in some of the record stores in Leeds. They'll just go, well, we don't have space. And you're like,
are you fucking serious?
Mate, I will, on record, crash records. Other ones have been amazing, like Jumbo and stuff like that, which are great. But like, I rang them up and was like, oh, you know, could you stock a record? And it's like, not really got space. I'm like, what the what? For a single record? For local hit? What? But they haven't. And this is the kind of thing you come up against. And it doesn't half make you go, well, why bother? Because it's not going to... I mean, even if I manage to get a record in Crash Records and maybe someone buys it, like, what's happening there? Or I get played on BBC Radio Leeds. What's happening there? So Radio 6 is the way. And I had an in. So I've got another group called Tough Crowd. I don't know whether I've shown you that stuff. All right, cool. So we got some play on Radio 6 because the guy who did the artwork's wife had been emailing the producer of Lauren Laverne's show, pretty much, you know, morning Lauren, just putting the dishes out, kind of conversational things that back and forth, and they'll read them out occasionally because they need stuff to read out. And because of that, that was an in for us, and we got played a couple of times on Radio 6.
Yeah.
And now that's been shut down because the producer's moved on elsewhere, and we can't just send a message to the old, you know, we've played us before, and here's, no, they don't want to know. And it's like, so how do you get in that circulation? I think once you get in that rotation, it's great, but it's getting people to make that step and go, oh, I'm going to play this, it's new. You don't have many, not many John Peels anymore who'll just give anything a go kind of thing. Like,
fuck, man. That's a mad
one. It's depressing, though. I'm like, bloody hell. Everyone else manages to do it, don't they? So, like, I'm sure there's a way, and I'm probably just down on it. and it's probably the non-hunger thing again that's making me go, oh, I'll just do
it. Well, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because you sort of think, like, when I started doing stand-up, I just sort of thought, if I'm able to pay my bills from doing comedy, then I would consider that I've done it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've made it. Do you know what I mean? Because you sort of think, it's a gift. Oh God, this sounds so wanky, but it is a gift to be able to do something you really. Oh God, kill me. But you know what I mean.
Bro, it is though. Genuinely, you
obviously you are, because you're getting on every freaking radio TV show going, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's I think I've got about 6 months left.
Is it?
Yeah.
You've ridden a beautiful wave.
Yeah, and then I will just...
surf the hell out of it.
Yeah, and then I'll just disappear, I think.
Surely there's always Mock the Week.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So do you listen to much hip-hop yourself?
Not as much as I should, really. A lot of the old school stuff that I still really like. I had a little podcast myself because I shut down by... I ran a record label for 6 years, and in 2012 I just got bored of it, and people were taking a piss and using the facilities too much and pissing on the floor, as you might have heard, in certain bars and stuff like that. Just fucking up my house, basically. So I sacked that off, and I needed something in the space. So I made a show called A Up, which was like initially a weekly podcast, but with music, where like I would be digging through SoundCloud or whatever to find new good hip hop. And at that time, I was keenly into it because I was trying to listen to people who weren't like played six figure views on YouTube. Wanted to find something a little smaller, and I was right up with it. But that weekly episodes became monthly episodes, and monthly episodes became once in 3 months, and then I stopped it. And then now I'm not really doing it anymore, and I feel bad because they're in. It's difficult to find it out there. So you get stuff that like yourself or whatever will put on your feed, but then you might not have time or even type it in your Spotify or whatever. But it's a terrible excuse. It's because there's so much access to stuff. Or back in the day, I do a lot of digging for jazz stuff now, so I'm always trying to listen out for stuff that I can make music with and listen to as well. And as a result, I kind of listen to less hip hop.
Yeah,
which is a shame. So there's still certain people.
Well, it's a weird one because like since Spotify and all that shit, obviously you suddenly are opened up to loads more music.
Of course.
But then what happens is there's so much stuff that I didn't get hold of from the era when I first got into hip hop. Like there's loads of stuff. Like you could discover, you could spend a year listening to stuff from 94 that you hadn't heard.
And it's all banging.
Yeah.
Every track you're like, yo. And it was probably some throwaway album track and it's fire in it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so like, you sort of go, like sometimes I just think, I ain't got fucking time to keep up with it, man. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's the truth of it. Like, because there's so much old shit that you love and you just think, and then the argument is like that you just get frozen listening to what you listen to and you don't listen to any new stuff, and I understand why that is. Do you know what I mean? Because
it's a shame though. It's a real shame. Do you have like a source of like new good hip hop? Have you got someone who's constantly like nudging you and go, yo, you need to check this, you need to check that?
Not really. No, I mean, it's certainly I mean now from doing the podcast, people will send stuff.
Of course. Yeah.
And then like, so it does give me an access to stuff that I probably wouldn't have come across like otherwise.
Nice.
And I do sort of actively seek it out or whatever.
Good.
But it's hard. And, you know, like you're doing other shit. And then also the other thing is I sometimes think, am I listening to music in the right way? Because like when I used to listen to music, I could afford like one album every 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And I'd listen to that almost exclusively. And that album would be printed into my, you know,
you'd like, know the bars,
I'd remember it forever, like properly be in, and I'd know it backwards. Whereas now, you know, I'll say I like an album, but
you've listened to it like maybe twice through or whatever.
Exactly.
All the other stuff.
Yeah. And so, like, you just, it's not, you know, it used to be like, oh, I love that album,
on this track he says da 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 da, and like you'd know it off by heart. Whereas now he'd be like, yeah, that album's great. I have got a recollection of it being great. Do you know what I mean?
Passed me by at one point. Yeah.
So it's like, it's just a totally different.
We're in a very non-album generation now where it's like about this track and this one blew up and that guy's done this track and we'll just keep moving on. And like, and young people are doing the same. They'll just play a track very quickly and like move on. And you don't get the romance is gone because you kind of. You don't get to sit through and go, oh, how they put that and link that track together with that. But at the same time, I dig it because like everyone's got a short attention span and there's so much access to everything. I get why people do what they do. Like.
But I sort of understand why vinyls come back.
Yes.
Because like there's something about sitting down and being fully engaged with what you're listening
nothing,
to.
Nothing is more... This is terrible. Nothing is more...
We sell out such a pair of old fuckers.
Tell me about it. nothing is more disheartening than seeing my missus hates me for this, getting an email that's like, oh, so and so has bought your album, and it's like they've just bought the digital version. You're like, man, fuck. Like when I've gone into the, I'm like, you know, look, I've done a little pull out booklet for you and lyrics and stuff like that. It's like, nah, we'll just chuck it on the iPod and it's fine, and I own it. It's like, and it, but this, and she goes mental at me for that because it's like, good, they don't want to fill the house up with crap.
Yeah,
they want to own it and they're not just listening to it on YouTube. Good for them, and you should be, and I should be grateful. But I'm like, my heart always sinks because you want the romance of like holding the vinyl. I frigging love that feeling of being able to hold a record, and when there's a new artist or whatever I'm excited about and I want to buy their album and it's only digital, I'm always like, man, I keep sending. There's a website, it's wonderful, called Curate.
Yeah.
Where have you heard about it?
Yeah, I've heard
it's
of it.
It's friggin' amazing, and people can like just put their album on there, and if 100 people want it, it'll get pressed to vinyl, and they don't have to pay anything, which is always the problem with vinyl. It's just having to put up their X £1,000 to get it pressed in the first place. And there'll be artists where I'm like emailing them, going, yeah, I've heard you got an album out. Is there any chance you can just go on Curate and bob it in? Because like, chances are they'll get 100 copies. And piece of piss, and then it's something to hold and own and feel like you've got in your hand, but it's only to be old school about it, really. And it's like, you're gonna listen to it, it's not driving around listening to a vinyl. I'm not like, it's definitely gonna be on Spotify or whatever, so
yeah,
I'm just as bad as everyone else.
Are you doing gigs at the moment?
Mainly with Flame Griller. We did a nice festival last weekend in Corby, as I said, which is called the Rocked Up Festival, which these lads had put, just this group of mates who just put it on. So Flame Griller did one out there, and XP did one as well. So like same DJ, I played earlier on, and then Flame Griller headlined, because of course I can't headline beyond my own band. and that was good. And then the next one's a Flame Griller. We're playing at a breakdance competition in Bradford, because I know quite a good breakdancer who like runs a lot of nights in Bradford, so we're doing one there. But it's few and far between, because like one of them's got a kid, and the other one's really busy, like works 6 days as a grafter, like he's a builder and stuff like that. So like there's just not a lot of time, and we don't hook up. And there was a time when they were always around the studio, like maybe weekly, and we were writing something, and now it's like maybe we'll talk to each other once a month, like
right.
It won't be about hip hop or whatever. But there was a time where we were just like on it, you write a verse, and now we've kind of dropped off from that. So we've written like maybe two songs for a new album over the last 3 years. So it's not, doesn't bode well, which is one of the reasons I started doing this solo stuff. But yeah, I haven't gone out looking for, there's nothing worse than, I loved listening to you and Frankie Boyle talk about gigs, and that there was nothing better than no one turning up.
Oh my God.
It was just such a great feeling. And in my heart of hearts, I knew exactly what you meant. Even though, like, I love rocking a good gig.
Yeah.
But with my shit, as I say, small in the game, no one's heard of me. It's hard work, because it's not like people are shouting the words along. So I got my mate to make these boards, like literally wooden boards with a pole, with like the words written on for like choruses, and be like, one, two, say that now, kind of thing. And like, and it's just, the whole thing is like a grafting session for that full 40 minutes. You're just like working and trying to get them to listen for the first time to your music.
The thing is with stand up, it's like, you know, before I was touring, I'd like, you know, you go and do these clubs and people had not heard of you, but they are paying attention to you, right? Once they, if you manage to, I mean, loads of times I went and did those gigs and fucking died on my hoop. But if you could get them in because they're paying attention, whereas a number of times I've been to gigs and it's been like the support act or whatever, and I've looked at the support acts and I've looked at the crowd and I thought, there is nothing short of setting themselves on fire. There is nothing
they could do
to get the attention of this crowd.
Especially
there's
if
no fucking
they're
way.
A small artist playing for like, you know, the Far Side are coming to play a gig or whatever. Everyone's like, when the fuck are they playing? Yeah, like who are these
there's
guys?
There's just no. It's just absolutely no, like, and you know, you can try and, like you said, you try and rock it as much as you can. I think, I mean, obviously, you have to try and come up with ingenious ways of getting their
attention. Innovative ideas that work. And it works sometimes, but sometimes it does feel like pulling teeth. And
yeah.
A lot of gigs, well, a few gigs I've walked away from, I'm going, fucking hell. So I like to do a gig when I know it's going to be good. Like, I'll probably turn down more. I mean, it's to do with our availability and stuff like that. But, like, yeah. And there have been a lot of opportunities. I probably could blag for more. Best solo gig I ever did was in London.
Oh, really?
I did one in Stoke Newington back end of last year. And it was frigging phenomenal. There's a crew, a night called Holding Court.
Right.
And they get a lot of... They do them every month or so. There's a guy called Luke who runs them, and they always do a sick do. And it was just great. A lot of people who I know, like expats from Yorkshire who's lived, came through, and just a really nice vibe.
Expats from Yorkshire.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They're living in London now to make their way with their fucking bindle and that. Bloody hate expats. Anyway... Don't get me started on London, mate. But yeah, so we've lost a lot of people to it. But yeah, there ain't a lot of call for gigs in Leeds. Like, not a lot of hip-hop promoters. There are some, but it's kind of crusty nights. Short kind of sausage festy, no women kind
really?
Of vibe. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's not fun for anyone, really. Yeah, it's just a bit grotty. Like, yeah, not painting a great picture of it, but...
No, I like it. It sounds like the type of scene I'd get into, man.
You'd love it, mate. Yeah. No, honestly. Well, do you get to many hip-hop gigs yourself, then? Do you manage to go to, like, independent ones? Or
I do, now and again, but it's increasingly more difficult. But I do you know what, man? I've got to be honest with you. I'm fucking, like... It used to be, I went through a phase of like when I was in like my, probably throughout my whole of my 20s,
yeah.
I was fucking going all the time, right? And I want to get right down the front. And then gradually, as the years went on, I gave less and less of a shit about being down the front, and I moved to the back. Then I'd be up somewhere else where it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And then now I've got to check the fucking parking out before I even think about going. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same thing. Even if it's something I enjoy, like I could book tickets, and it's no insult to the people I'm going to see. I don't mean it to be. No. But like, I look at the tickets and I'm about to leave my house and I think, I mean, can I be fucking
good?
Could
just stay here and everything. Nothing would change about life. Yeah, that's terrible.
This is bad. These are two people that want people to come and see them.
Please,
we're talking about
please Ash. Come and see.
And no, talking about fuck. How fucking shit it is to go out and do exactly that.
It's terrible, isn't it?
I don't know what to do about it, mate. We've both picked something that we hate. I feel like such a hypocrite. I really want you to come and see me on tour, but yeah, fuck going and seeing someone on tour, man.
Yeah. As long as it's outside my house, like, I'll wave at you from there, man. Yeah, I'm saying, man, there did come a point, and I agree with you, where I was like forcing my way to the front, and then sort of a point of time in my life where I was like, okay, you know, I've been here 45, probably could call it a day there, and I'd be pretty happy, and then they'll play for another 45 minutes. You're like,
dude, I remember feeling so ungrateful because I managed to like blag tickets to like Prince did this like small gig at the Coco in Camden, right? It was like this like really like, I don't know how
long ago we're talking, like not long before he went.
Yeah, not that long before he went, right? So it was it was insane.
Yeah.
And I went, and this is really bad because I know Prince was a genius, right? But I was stood watching him and he did a really long show because obviously it was like a special event and blah, blah, blah. And about just over an hour in, I remember standing there watching it going, I think I've had enough of Prince for a bit.
There's people who literally crawl over broken glass to have been in your position for that moment. Like, no, it's probably enough now, you know?
Yeah. But listen, that was great. It was an amazing gig.
Of course, yeah.
But
experience as well.
Yes. But after a bit, I was like, oh, do you know what?
Yeah.
I've seen what he's doing what he's going to do for the... Do you know what? I'm going to fucking regret this when people are walking out of my tour just like 40 minutes in.
We're done now, mate. Don't come back for the second half. Like, well, yeah, fair enough. He did say. You get stand up, you get seats.
Yeah, that's true.
And confectionery and that. So you're laughing, really. Yeah. Like, yeah, whereas standing up for a gig can get a bit, you know what I mean? Especially if it's a busy gig and you're getting pushed around. A mate of mine went to Hilltop Hoods. DJ went to Hilltop Hoods, and friggin' it was just full of sweaty Australians, like with their tops off, and it was disgusting. He said he had the time of his life.
Yeah.
But like, there was a point where they went, oh, now it was hard, you know, well through the gig, and they were like, right, everyone take your tops off, or an item clothing off, and wave it around your head. And he said the sweat was just pouring in it. And it's just like, there's no point where I, as a 33-year-old man, lover of hip hop or not, and I like a lot of Hilltop Hoods, I don't want to be in that.
No.
From ever, like, why would you ever do that to yourself?
I went to see Public Enemy.
Nice.
I've seen them loads, but this particular time, I've seen them loads. Look at this little brag. I've seen them loads,
seen
actually.
Loads, mate. And you're gifted.
Yeah. No, hold on. I didn't mean. Oh, God. We need to fucking take that bit out. Anyway, so
Public Enemy.
I know. I need to clarify this gift thing. I feel too embarrassed,
bro.
It was bad, wasn't it?
No.
I didn't mean it was. I didn't mean I had a gift. I mean it was a gift to be able to do this.
Of course. There you go. Nicely done. Actually, that... beautiful. Yeah, yeah. That's turned it on its head, man. Nice work. Public Enemy. Anyway.
Anyway, I went to see Public Enemy, and I was. They're just about to start. They're just about to come on, and a guy came and stood next to me, and he smelt like a fucking rotting foot, right? And you know when people, as the gig's about to start, pick where they're gonna be.
Yeah,
he had picked that's where he's gonna be, and he's gonna be right in front of me. And that was, I remember things myself. First of all, I don't want a beer anymore. Second of all, how the fuck can you smell like this at the beginning of the gig? Like you're talking about people smelling art at the end of it.
Yeah, words.
This guy fucking reeks, mate. It was fucking unbelievable.
Well, I saw Public Enemy in Manchester, and it was a good do. But Flavor Flav stuck around on stage after long after
they
finished.
Did he play the drums?
No, there were no drums, as I remember. It was just decks and Chuck D bounced, but Flavor Flav was just chilling and was chatting to anyone who come up to him, but on the mic, like. It was weird. There was a young lad who looked too young, and he was like, "Yo, stay in school, G," and all this kind of shit. It's like the most surreal moment of my life watching Flavor Flav like try and school the youth man of Manchester.
Flavor Flav has always been pro-educated. Like it's always been his thing, isn't it?
True. Yeah, yeah. He's a bit of a preacher in that way, I guess. He always did have a positive vibe.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, we're almost out of time here, but I did want to ask you. I remember when I in my trying to be a rapper. I wasn't trying to be a rapper, but I used to like get
damn,
on
you used to write.
Awful,
cool.
Right? But the reason I bring this up is not to to talk about another one of my gifts, but because I remember I was in Hungary on like some student thing, and they said met this Hungarian rap group, and they said, "Do you want to do some lyrics?" And we did it, and they said it's difficult to get our heads around your accent. We haven't heard like a UK accent. Okay. And now obviously it's a bit different, but then like I haven't really heard a UK accent. Mm. And most UK voices that you hear are that southern kind of thing. Has your accent played any part in your thinking, or have you experienced any obstacles because of it, or
bro, when I started rapping, disgusting as it is, because I was into American hip hop, I started rapping with an American accent.
Nice.
Were you straight in with your UK accent, were you?
I think so, yeah.
Damn, that's impressive, man.
There must have been a time when I fucking dropped
just had a bit of, because you'll have done other lyrics of American.
Mate, when I started doing stand up, I put on a fucking Sri Lankan accent.
Really?
Yeah. Only for the first gig, and then I realised that was fucking insane.
It's not going to happen. Fair dues. No, so it took me a while. So I was probably, you know, like 13 to 16 with an American accent, and recorded like an early demo tape with this awful American accent. And then like through time and through like people going, "You need to fuck off the American accent," just did my own. And I've never really found it a barrier for entry massively. Like if Americans listening to English, that's the only barrier I've ever heard of, because you get Americans going, "I can't really get down with it, the English accent." And that could be like Jest or anyone, like regardless of the accent. I've never heard a southerner go, "Well, I'm not really feeling this north." And I think it does add a little bit of exclusivity to it. Because I mean, if you heard like Geordie rap, you heard rappers from Newcastle, it sounds fucking amazing.
Yes,
same with a strong Scottish or a strong Irish. Done well, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a bit, you know, it's like gold dust. There's not a lot of it about. So I think it can help the exclusivity.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I think it's a strength, man. Because I remember like when UK hip hop, you know, you will have listened to hip hop during the years when everyone's going, "I don't understand why UK hip hop's not getting more play, man. It's ridiculous," all that.
Yeah.
And then like the thing was that UK hip hop was trying to emulate American hip hop. Why would you bother listening to UK hip hop if it's a version of an American thing?
Totally.
Whereas now UK hip hop is very much its own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you've got a rapper with a completely different accent, that's even a bigger degree of separation. Do you know what I mean? And also, I agree with you. I think your accent is so like well suited to hip hop. Do you know what I mean? And it's just the luck of the draw, isn't it? Certain accents work and certain accents don't they?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't know. I still grew up hating my fucking voice when it was recorded. I don't know.
Really?
You went through that as well. But there's a point where you get over that, don't you, and stuff. So I've never really known whether that was the case. But I'm quite, you know, as I say in Yorkshire, like I go down as a bit of a Radio 4 voice, like, because it's not like full on. So maybe it's because I'm not quite over the top Yorkshire.
Right.
Managed to cut down the middle of it a little more, and people it's clearer maybe.
maybe, I don't know, but you might be the only person who's ever complimented me on my accent, actually, for hip-hop. So
really?
Nice work, man. I'll take that. Another one for the press kit.
It's just another one of my many gifts. And it's just good to be able to give you one.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
So how can we check out your stuff if we want to?
Well, I am, my Twitter handle is XPEXPOrBen. So you can, and then you forward slash, that'll pretty much work for anything. Instagram, Facebook, SoundCloud if you want to be on there. But I'm also known as Experimentality, and that's the Bandcamp. So it's tricky, man. And just XP
is it true?
On its own.
Have I just made this up? Was your first rap name Voodoo X?
Fuck me. Well, what? Is how that... do you know that shit? Who have you been talking to?
I'm sure I've read this somewhere that you're right. Is that right?
That's that's fucking bang right. Bro, I thought that's like the Bromley thing, man. No one knows that. Fuck. And now it's on a podcast. Fuck's sake. That, you know, the 16-year-old American accent?
Yeah, yeah. That was Voodoo X.
That was Voodoo motherfucking X.
Right.
Man. So, yeah, and then I changed it because me and a mate of mine like the idea of, we like a, what's it called when you add a word together with another? Experimentality, obviously. And,
yeah.
And then I went to a night and did an open mic, and a guy was like, oh, take your name, what's your name and number and stuff. And I was like, oh, Experimentality. And he was like, that's fucking far too long, mate.
Yeah.
You want to see XP, and that's what came out of that. So I still kind of run with kind of both, but
yeah,
like generally it's XP, but it's completely you put XP into Google and good luck, because I think it trades on the stock market. There's an XP thing like NASDAQ.
Yes, there is, but I think if you I can help you here, because if you capitalize the P as is in your name,
word, and a lowercase X,
it deals with
that. Does it deal with it?
Yeah,
Google's a beast, man.
Sick. Yeah,
well, you can find me by doing that. I made sure I had a really long title for my album, so like there's no, you can't mess that one up.
But listen, the album is amazing. You've got to check it out.
Big the fuck up.
And when do you reckon the new one will come out?
Definitely next year, by about October, I hope.
Okay, wicked. Listen, dude, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, man.